Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save, and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine. And as always, it is a pleasure to be with you. Doesn't matter what type of investment it is, for many investors, the dream is getting in on the ground floor of spotting an opportunity before everyone else does. Imagine purchasing shares in Apple or Google, or I guess more recently Nvidia, before those companies really took off. You know, it's nice to think about, that's for sure. Well, property's no different. The question is, though, how can property investors go about identifying hotspots before they boom? Well, on today's episode of Friends with Money, we are going to get into just that. We're going to talk about spotting growth suburbs before they become too hot, and we're also going to get into what to look for in a specific investment property, which can, fingers crossed, deliver some capital growth over time. And to do all that, I'm very pleased to say that we are joined today by the founder of Melbourne-based buyers agency, Mecca Property Group, Abdullah Noah. Abdullah, many thanks for joining some Friends with Money. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Abdullah, let's get straight into it because there's a lot of things I kind of want to get into today. How can investors identify growth suburbs before the market catches on? You know, what are some of the hallmarks that they should be looking for?
That's a really good question. Look, I think the first one I look for is vacancy rates. So I like to look at the rental market and see what's happening from the rental market in terms of you know, how much activity is there, how many properties are listed for rent, how long is it taking to lease out, and then, you know, how many of those properties are actually vacant. So when you start to see those numbers coming, you know, those listed properties available coming down, when you start to see like this competition, you know, that's when you start to, you know, I think the first sign of a market going through a growth phase is when you start to get rental growth. Because when rental growth comes through, you know, investors start to, you know, open their eyes. And, you know, with the availability of information out there today, especially in the prop tech space, investors are very cluey as to, you know, which locations they can buy a property in and make sure they have a tenant. So that's generally the first sign that I look for. Also, infrastructure investment. I think not many people talk about this, but you want to see, you know, councils or certain locations going through a restructure plan. You know, whether it's activity centres, whether they're looking to, whether they're building like a new bypass or freeway that's going to, you know, improve accessibility to that region. Like one that comes to mind is the northeastern region of Melbourne. You got the Northeast Link connecting Greensboro to Doncaster. Now, my in-laws live in the north. I live in the southeast, and like, yeah, it is horrific driving through that stretch without a bypass. So, you know, that coming into play, I think, is going to open up a lot more accessibility to the northeastern suburbs, and going to connect that really well with Melbourne. And I think Melbourne will have a full ring road. So, infrastructure investment is the second one that we generally look at. The other parts I look for is like owner occupier. Like, you want to look at amenities as well. Like, what's changing in these certain locations? Like, you want to see, you know, what drives owner occupiers to get to certain locations. If there is, you know, a really popular school, or if there is, you know, school going through infrastructure investment, you know, like more money being spent to open up a campus, or you want to see like, you know, the local amenities such as a train station, or even like, you know, the local swimming center. You know, there's one particular suburb called Fawkner in Melbourne that just underwent a $38 million revamp. You know, they've pretty much turned a really old facility into a brand new facility. So again, that's going to drive an occupiers to want to get into this suburb because it's got a great swimming center and it's good for families. So you want to be, you want to have a mixture of both.
So a lot of really common sense stuff there, yeah. I guess. I can see the appeal of a suburb if you're going to get a new swimming center, if the transport becomes better, you know, if they're building a brand new hospital and or something like that, and more jobs are going to come in. Abdullah, you mentioned a couple of Melbourne examples there. Are there any others that I guess spring to mind for you throughout the country that have kind of gone through these growth spurts suddenly, yeah, that people might have been able to anticipate ahead of time?
Yes. Look, one thing I look for is the economy, right? So you want to see like what's happening to the GSP of the state, which is a gross state product or gross territory product. You want to be able to look at, you know, how is it, you know, like how are we trending now in the last 12 months versus the last 3 years? And if you're seeing the economy grow, generally speaking, you're going to see more jobs available. you're going to see more jobs advertised. When there are more jobs advertised, what government states or territories do is they open up their borders to open up more skilled migrants coming in, right? So, you know, I think a good economy is a precursor to populations, also a precursor to capital growth. One other region that comes to mind is Darwin. So Darwin, I think, has surprised everyone this year. Between January and last month, I think it's averaging about 1.2 to 1.3% per month in growth. Now, we looked at Darwin. I went to Darwin in February, but we looked at Darwin in October last year because we started to notice some tightening. Like, we noticed that rental growth in that region over the last 2 years was quite strong. We noticed vacancy rates were quite tight. We also noticed the GSP was 4.5%. So we went over to Darwin in February and we started to make some acquisitions in January. And it's certainly a market that I wouldn't say is like a foundational market like Melbourne or Sydney. Certainly a market that has historically been volatile. But in terms of cycle, it's definitely going to go through a growth cycle. And we're seeing that now. We're seeing it happen. You know, so it's good to, you know, that's probably a way to identify growth. But it's also very important to understand that your property is a long game. So sometimes you may be forced to buy into these smaller markets because you don't have the capital to get in and you need that rental income to offset the outgoings. So long as you have the strategy of knowing when to exit or, you know, how you can further value add that property so that you can exit one day, I think that's really important to consider.
Darwin's such a great example. I've got to say, it definitely surprised me in the last couple of monthly updates from CoreLogic, or I should say Cotality now, and seeing that it's got the kind of fastest growth rate in terms of dwelling values of all the capital cities. It definitely took me by surprise. So yeah, you obviously got ahead of the game there, Abdul.
Yeah, I did a webinar end of last year, and it was with a group just on one of the Facebook groups, and they asked me what the top two regions for growth this year was going to be. And I said, well, top three, I said, I think Perth will continue its sort of run probably the back end of this year. But I said Darwin and Melbourne are probably the two markets that are going to see the growth rates. And a lot of people questioned me on Darwin. They said, well, what about Gladstone? What about Rockhampton? But I just looked at sort of fundamentals around affordability. Like if you have supply coming down, right? If your supply or inventory data is coming down, but you have very strong affordability, like the income per house and income per rent ratio is about 25 to 28%. It's the lowest, most affordable city in the country. So if you can forecast, you know, that the inventory levels are getting tighter, then you can almost say, well, the locals can afford to pay more for that sort of property because they can afford to pay more, right? As opposed to say Sydney, where Sydney is right now and some of the areas around Sydney, you can still see really low levels of inventory, but affordability is a concern. Mm-hmm. And some parts of Sydney are starting to see a recorrection. Some of the more affordable areas are continuing to see, you know, good movement, but that's mainly because of the fact that it's affordable for the Sydney market.
Makes a lot of sense. And having spent about 15 years of my life in Sydney, I can definitely appreciate that. Abdullah, shifting gears a little bit now, I'd love to kind of, I guess, zoom in on individual properties themselves. So in your experience, are there any particular traits that people should be looking for in an investment property?
You know how everyone talks about, like, you know, location is really important. So I break it down into four simple steps. The first thing you have is, what city are you buying in? So which part of the growth cycle is it in, right? And what's happening to the local economy there? What's happening to, you know, job advertisements? And then what region within that city? You want to buy in an area that's supply constrained. Like, so you don't want to buy a house where there's a lot of residential land available and they've got a lot of pipeline coming through that, you know, where your house is going to be competing against all these other houses, right? And then what suburb within the region? Now, as you know, in every city council, there are suburbs you don't want to go in at, and there's suburbs that are really good, you know, really sort of family friendly. So you want to make sure you buy in an area that's owner-occupier driven, because owner-occupiers generally drive a lot more value in a location, right? And then the fourth one is, what streets within that suburb are you buying in? So you don't want to be buying, you know, a house that is backs onto a highway because you're going to have noise issues. You don't want to be buying a property that has got environmental hazards on it, right? Like the one that I can think of is power stations, substations, high voltage power lines. Environmental risks are a concern. You want to buy a house that is essentially flat. You don't want to buy something that's on downward slope or upward slope. Generally speaking, it wipes away about, you know, 20 to 30% of buyers in the market that will be interested in it, right? You're creating a reason why someone not wanting to buy it in the future. You don't want to be buying a property, you know, you essentially want to look at the orientation of the land. Right? Your orientation is very important. So, you know, if you have the same opportunity and one's a triangle block and the other one's a rectangular block, I'd probably go for the rectangular block, right? You want to look at zoning, like, you know, how good is this zoning? Like, can you further add value in the future with, you know, potential subdivision or with a granny flat? You know, these are the questions that you want to sort of ask yourself when you're selecting a property. These are the questions I ask myself too, and we do with our clients.
That's really interesting. Do you ever kind of drill in beyond that? Do you look at existing features of a home? Like, I'm thinking about kind of, you know, auxiliary things like swimming pools, or whether they have, you know, solar panels on the roofs or anything like that? Or is that kind of a little bit by the by when it comes to actually deciding what could be a good investment property?
Yeah, I think value add is important. I definitely think looking at the configuration of the floor plan is critical, you know, because sometimes there's enough room where you can buy a 3-1, turn into a 3-2. We've done a few renovation uplift jobs for clients where we've turned a 3-1 into a 3-2 with an ensuite. It's added value from a rental point of view and from a capital growth point of view. You want to look at the building size of the actual house. So you can get a 3-1 that's on 110 square meters. That's probably too small to do a value add. But if you get a 3-1 on 200 square meters, there's lots of opportunity where you can turn, you know, a second living space. So it has to be practical as well. It can't just be a 3-1 into a 3-2 on a really small house.
It makes a lot of sense. There's so much to think about, obviously. I'm sure people could spend a lot of their spare time doing this if they're interested. Speaking of time, Abdullah, I'm kind of conscious of how much time we have today. So before we let you go, though, I mean, given what you do day to day, it would be crazy not to ask you for a few additional tips if you're willing to share them for any, I guess, either budding property investors that are listening or even experienced ones that have already got a few properties under their belt.
Yeah, I think like in terms of locations around the country right now, I think Perth has recalibrated, you know, its sort of hysteria pricing last year to now. I think prices have sort of, we saw listing volumes come up and then sort of relax. I went to Perth 2 weeks ago, such a vibrant city, lots of business, lots of migration. GSP, or the local economy, is still very strong, still running a surplus budget. So I'd probably still look into that region but you've got to be really careful where you buy in Perth. Along the coast is generally pretty good. You don't want to go too far down, though. I would also look into, I think Melbourne is a market that's certainly hit its bottom. Don't listen to the media around, you know, the cost of owning a home and the rental standards. Look, everyone should be allowed to live in a home without mold. Everyone should be allowed to live in a home with aircon and heating. If you look at the holding costs for a Melbourne-based investment versus a Brisbane-based investment right now, you would see that the holding cost is actually quite similar. If not, Melbourne could be a little bit cheaper, right? Even with land tax, right? You just have to make sure what structure you're buying under. But if you're buying under a personal name, the land, you know, the complete holding cost is between, say, $9,000 to $10,000 for each state. So don't get too caught up in, you know, the sentiment. I think the media's had a big drive in making Melbourne sort of a very negative state to hold a property. But I do believe it has so much upside that you've got to buy well. You've got to buy in the right areas. You've got to make sure that you're buying in an area that's got limited supply. In terms of experienced investors, Tom, I would say start looking into your portfolio and start looking into commercial. I think commercial is a really, really good avenue to start to get some cash flow into your portfolio. Yeah. Residential does cost money. If a client comes to work with me, generally speaking, if we look at their profile, if they're already holding some residential assets and they've got some equity and they've got some good cash, we're talking to them about potentially looking at a commercial investment. Obviously, with commercial, there are different asset classes that you can get into. I'd probably steer away from the offices, even if you had a government tenant in there. I'd probably look into, you know, retail is a bit sketchy as well. Just make sure the right region, you know, just make sure that there's not a high vacancy rate in that sort of retail space. But, you know, industrial, you can't go wrong in. Industrial is an asset class that is, you have a lot more tenants interested in an industrial facility than, say, an office. We call offices and retail single-use, you know, sites. But multi-use sites where you have a lot more tenants interested, generally speaking, they're probably the lowest risk profile assets. So yeah, so that's probably, I think commercial is a great way for investors to get in. We're certainly talking to our clients once they've got about three, you know, residential properties. We're very much about quality over quantity. You don't need to have the 15, 30 properties in your portfolio. You just need to have the right quality and the right mix hybrid between commercial and residential. That's what I think anyway.
Kind of feel bad cutting the conversation short now that you got in a commercial. We'll have to get you back on, Abdullah, to have a chat about that. Because I feel like otherwise we could go on for hours. But it is all we have time for today. So thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure chatting. And thank you so much for sharing such excellent insights as well.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, Tom.
That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast. But don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news. Or you can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends with Money will be right back in your podcast feed before you know it. So until then, my name is Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.